Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cooper. I'm the Global Chief Brand Officer at Edelman, and I'm really, really happy today to be joined by Fortune Magazine's Hilary Hoffauer. Hilary is Fortune's Success Editor, reporting on work, money, and Gen Z in the workplace. She was previously an economics correspondent for Business Insider, focused on the intersection of youth, culture, and wealth. Hilary, welcome to The Trustmakers.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I absolutely think a success editor has got to be one of the best titles ever.
Yeah.
So I really thought it would be good for everyone to understand a little bit about your background and what you cover at Fortune. You just sort of give us some sort of idea. At Business Insider, you reported on this intersection of youth, culture, and wealth, and you had this particular focus on millennials and Gen Z. So what sparked your interest in this topic, and sort of how did you get into covering this area?
So I worked at Business Insider for about 4 years, and I began as a personal finance reporter. And while I was reporting on everything from retirement to 401ks, but during that time, I had really started gravitating towards articles that were focused on millennials, the state of their finances, their student debt burden, like what they like to spend money on. So I kind of began developing it as an entire beat and shifted toward covering millennial wealth entirely. So the consumer behavior of high earning millennials and how the economy shaped the lives of your quote unquote average millennial Joe. So I guess my interest really peaked because it was relatable for me as a millennial myself. And I just wanted to know what my peers across the economic spectrum were up to and to write and read about the things that affected me as well. So when Gen Z really started shifting onto the into the influential scene in terms of both work and consumer spending, I started covering them a lot more as well. And then that ended up leading me into my role at Fortune now, which is helping to build out the success vertical on the website, covering everything from the future of work to personal finance with a specific focus on younger generations, as well as the middle manager as well. So, you know, still kind of looking at the millennials there, but really focusing in on what it is that Gen Z wants at work.
It's such an interesting conversation right now. Do you sort of see primary difference between how millennials came of age and now how Gen Z are coming of age? Do you see things that are the same? Do you see sort of things that are particularly different? And do you see, you know, millennials, we had 9/11, we've had recessions, mm-hmm. Of course, we've had the pandemic with Gen Z and war and all sorts of political unrest. Do you see more the same, more different? How's it been kind of following this?
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit of both. So the really big, there are a lot of parallels between millennials and Gen Z in terms of the economy. So the older cohorts both graduated into a recession. For millennials, it was obviously the financial crisis. You know, I know that the narrative of the economically damaged millennial with all these financial challenges is a little bit tired by now, but this really did set them back in terms of wealth building and finding a stable job. In 2016, the millennials born in the 1980s, their wealth levels were 34% below where they should be. And that wealth deficit has narrowed. As of 2019, it's now 11%. So, you know, still behind, but making progress. So now on the other hand, Gen Z graduated into the coronavirus recession, which had a higher unemployment rate at the time than the peak of the Great Recession. And there was a lot of fear that they would end up following in the same footsteps as millennials. But that recession was much shorter with a quicker rebound. So the economic recovery has kind of given them a stronger beginning to adulthood than millennials had. And Gen Z is now one of the major players in the Great Resignation, you know, looking for new jobs that will provide them more money or with the flexibility that they want. So, but that said, both millennials and Gen Z are also dealing with similar economic challenges like student debt and dealing with inflation for the first time as adults. And in terms of the workplace specifically, I do think that they both want the same things at work, like work-life balance. But I think that the era of remote work and the pandemic emboldened Gen Z to speak up for these demands and be more vocal about them. Whereas I think millennials, while they wanted these things, they were also just more happy to be able to find a job after the recession. So therefore weren't as adamant about vocalizing these demands as we're seeing with the youngest generation right now.
That's sort of interesting because we're a bit obsessed with Gen Z here at Edelman. Mm-hmm. Me in particular, as I've overseen the creation and the launch of our Gen Z lab, which came out of six CMOs actually at a round table for a session that we were running, saying that that was the thing that was concerning them the most, that the understanding of Gen Z and the marketing to Gen Z seemed very frightening if you got it wrong. And so we thought, well, let's sort of debunk the myths and let's look at what you can actually do that is based on fact rather than fear. And one of the things that came out of that special report with Gen Z, where we've also looked at trust in the workplace with our trust barometer, is the importance of societal impact with work. And I do feel from what we've learned with the Gen Z data that Gen Z ask much more searching questions of their employers about how they're showing up, how they behave, both corporately and as employers and as a workplace, and what their the people who are at the board behave and what their own beliefs are. Do you see that in terms of the areas that you're covering, that despite their gratitude at being out in the workplace and their need for normality, they're still more concerned about sort of forensically understanding who they're engaging with as employers?
Definitely. I think that Gen Z is pretty skeptical, and that is not a bad thing. That just means that they crave authenticity. So with their employers, you know, they want to know, is their employer going to advocate for a social issue? Does the employer, you know, support the community or do community work? Do their values identify with Gen Z? And, you know, I think these things aren't just something that Gen Z looks for in the company that they work for, but also in the company that they're buying from too. They also want to, you know, spend their money on a company that they feel identifies with their values and that is authentic. At the end of the day, I think Gen Z just really wants to be able to trust who they're working for or who they're buying from.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Not to, because you might not understand a generation, don't feel that you can't work with that generation. And some of the people who are in very senior jobs who are of a certain age are sort of wary of upsetting Gen Z, and therefore it's sort of better for them to not to do anything than to engage with the generation and possibly be cancelled or possibly be called out. And yet your point about authenticity is what we also found in our data, that you shouldn't be scared of being cancelled. You shouldn't be scared that that's the action. As long as you are transparent, you work with that generation and you accept that you might not get everything right. So that kind of very, very important dialogue rather than monologue of communication. We've launched this Gen Z lab to basically help our company, you know, the clients that we work for and the brands that we represent better connect with this generation. We've created the role of the world's first CEO, because we felt like if you're going to have Gen Z, the C-suite needs to be relevant for that generation. And so Our first CEO is an incredible fashion designer, a gender fluid fashion designer, Harris Reed, who is very, very successful as a designer, but also as an advocate for change and understanding about fluidity across the board. And he has consulted, I mean, he's had these highlights of dressing Iman for the Met Gala or Beyonce and Harry Styles for Vogue. Actually has his runway show for London Fashion Week again, and is stellar in his world, but also has consulted for companies about debunking the myths of working with Gen Z. And if he's asked one thing, he says, ask questions, just work with us and just ask questions. Don't think that you can't ask questions. But where we're working with brands and we see that there's a hesitancy of getting it wrong, what do you see sets this generation apart from the rest in terms of their expectations from working with brands?
So I think that a big thing that Gen Z ask is the brand ethical? You don't have to champion every cause, but is there a specific focus that is like tied tightly to the company that Gen Z can themselves, they feel that they align with? I think like the big thing that really sets Gen Z apart is you have to remember they're very big activists. So I think if the brand taps into the inner activists of Gen Z, they have a really good chance of getting them on board. The other thing too, you know, going again back to authenticity, but Gen Z wants to see real people. Are your images photoshopped or are they untouched? And, you know, I think a lot of brands have made progress with this, but that's something that Gen Z still continues to look for. And I do think that this, you know, the desire for authenticity, I do think it kind of started with millennials, but I think that Gen Z is really taking it to the next level. And it's almost, you know, whereas for millennials, I think it was more of a desire. For Gen Z, I think these things are more of a requirement for them.
Yeah, so well said. I think that the one of the things that surprised me when I was chairing this panel was the fear around TikTok. And if it wasn't fear, it was utter misunderstanding. And, you know, people of a certain age going, well, I don't get it. I don't understand. So, you know, Gen Z is so closely associated with TikTok. But is it all TikTok? Is that the answer to everyone's Gen Z prayer?
I mean, so there is no denying that TikTok is big with Gen Z. And it took me a while personally to get on board with TikTok and to understand what it was. And it's not all just dance videos. You know, it blew up during the pandemic when they were at home with their families and disconnected from their friends and just really bored. It's kind of what TikTok is to Gen Z what Instagram was to millennials in the 2010s, right? So it is becoming this avenue for brands and marketers to also like get through to the younger generation. And it is emblematic of how they are the first digitally native generation and a mobile first generation. But there is more to Gen Z than TikTok. You know, like I said earlier, they're activists. They're also big creatives, they're entrepreneurs. I have worked with several Gen Zers who aren't big on social media at all. And, you know, while they have the platforms, like they don't use them regularly. So there is more to Gen Z than TikTok. I just think that the way that they are really expressing themselves or, you know, showing these parts of themselves, like their entrepreneurial side or their activist side, TikTok is just a platform for that.
Really interesting because my youngest daughter is a Gen Zer. She graduated during COVID with no graduation, which we just did this summer, 2 years after the event. She's entering the workforce now. And as part of everything that she's looking at, she's obsessed with the 90s, which is a bit scary because I remember that the first time round. But this seems to be a very big thing for Gen Z. Why the 90s? Why nostalgia for the 90s?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, living here in New York City, I see Gen Z in their the 90s outfits on the street all the time. Definitely a big thing. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's a response to economic discomfort. And we saw nostalgia too with millennials as an economic response, but it manifested a bit differently. The youth typically become nostalgic when the economy is struggling. They seek comfort and connection in the past. But instead of turning to childhood memories, which is usually what happens, Gen Z turned to a pre-social media time. So during the pandemic, the digital world was kind of all they had. So they sought an escape. And they found that in the 90s and the early millennium before, you know, Instagram came onto the scene and digital and Polaroid cameras were really big. So they're kind of searching for a disconnect from the digital world. But the ironic part to me is that they are making these nostalgic connections that aren't related to social media on social media. So like, you know, 90s is taking off on TikTok, and what they like about it is that it doesn't have much to do with social media. So I think it's kind of a funny little circle there.
It's really interesting, actually. I hadn't thought of it that way. And that's really interesting. And I think that the safety of it is a theme that's sort of coming through as to how you're describing it. And that's what we found in our Gen Z data. We call them the generation of sensibility, and they were looking for safety. And if you think about all the upheavals that they've had in their life, this doesn't seem to be a generation looking for mass aspiration. They're looking for some kind of protection and sense of the world, which is not making a lot of sense right now. And I guess this is where, going back to talking about the workplace, how they prioritize work-life balance is very interesting on the return to work discussion, that so many Gen Zers are coming into the workplace and they've not been in full-time office employment. And now their employers might be saying, come on, come back into the office. Like, well, not really. Why do I need to do that? This is how I'm living my life. And are they less for not experiencing an office culture, or are they more because they've got more of a work-life balance? What do you think they're sort of landing on in terms of this pretty important time now, as we hopefully are coming out of the pandemic and the restrictions that are hitting everyone globally?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as you pointed out, a lot of Gen Z has never been in an office. You know, I think there's only maybe 1 year or two of graduates, Gen Z graduates, before the pandemic hit. So everyone else has been working in the Zoom era. So it has made flexibility and work-life balance very important for Gen Z. They very much want to separate work from life, and a lot of studies back this up. But we also need to keep in mind that because they are fresh in their careers, this is a stage where networking and making connections is critical. And I personally, in my opinion, I don't think that work-life balance is necessarily about working from home full time. There are other studies that show that they haven't had a good onboarding experience, or that they are feeling lonely at home. There was actually a new survey out the other week that Gen Z summer interns felt that they missed connections because no one was in office. So I think it's more about them having the flexibility to create their own schedules and to, you know, like, have options rather than working from home full time. I also want to say that I think it's also just not the end all be all work-life balance. I think pay is also really important for Gen Z, and, you know, pay is typically important to everyone, but I think it gets overlooked a little with Gen Z because don't forget, salary pays the bills. And, you know, this generation is hearing talk of an impending recession, and they're dealing with inflation for the first time. So there's kind of an undercurrent of economic anxiety there. And pay is a top reason why the Gen Zers who are joining the Great Resignation are switching jobs. And there are studies that show that they would pick pay over flexibility. And one expert also told me that they have been prioritizing starting salaries more than previous generations. So I think that ideally, you know, Gen Z wants the whole package, both things, work-life balance and pay.
With that Gen Z attitude, do you think that they really have a message that we should be telling employers to take notice of, in terms of, if you want to appeal to this generation, these are the things that you really need to be cognizant of?
I think that at the end of the day, what Gen Z wants is a personalized career experience. And they want to work on their terms, and that's hard for managers to reckon with because it can kind of create a sense of a power struggle. But, you know, they want freedom and flexibility, but they also want and need a bit of structure. And they want to feel seen and heard as humans rather than just, you know, robots making profit for a company. So, you know, I'm not saying you should be their friend, but I think that the days of the traditional boss are kind of on their way out. They want more of a guide or coach. So, you know, can you provide them with a latticed career path? Can you provide them with trainings to help grow their skills? Can you do all this while also showing that you value their well-being? It really needs to be, I think, a holistic approach to appeal to Gen Z. And then also referring back to what we discussed earlier about, you know, having societal values that also align with Gen Z. That's, you know, obviously another important factor for them.
Yeah, it's really interesting because that really does dovetail into the second of our Gen Z reports, which we launched in the summer, which we entitled The New Cascade of Influence, because we found that the numbers were really significant in terms of how Gen Z influences other generations. And by the way, you don't have to have a Gen Z in your family for that to happen. Just Gen Z is across the board. And this won't be news to you, given that you're in this space, but across all areas, whether it was culture or the workplace, and obviously incredible influence on how we consume content and what content's up. Have you seen that this plays out from your experience in terms of how influence from Gen Z plays out in the real world? And do you think that this influence is greater than the generations that have gone before?
So I, yes, definitely have seen it play out in the real world. I mean, look at the whole skinny jeans debate that riled up the internet last year. That kind of began as a joke on TikTok, and now it's become a global trend, and you have wide leg jeans and straight leg jeans in stores. Skinny jeans are still around, but they're not the dominant, you know, style on the street. And another trend, like at quiet quitting, again, this started as like a term on TikTok, became viral. Now it's all anything employers can talk about. So it's very, the world is very keen to cater to Gen Z's preferences and desires. I don't think that this is different from past generations. I think it just seems stronger because we have social media, more social media to showcase it all. But this is what happens when a new generation enters their 20s and comes onto the scene. They become the new it generation. They're seen as the tastemakers or the influencers because they're the ones that are about to emerge into, you know, the biggest, have the most power in terms of consumer spending. And they're also like the next generation set to take over the workforce. So, you know, it is always important to marketers and brands and employers to look at the upcoming generation as kind of the sign of what's next. And I, you know, that's not unique to Gen Z, that is just the natural evolution of generations.
Yeah, we had a client who I was sharing Gen Z data with, who is a CMO for a very, very large pharma company. And she said, you know, I've just realized something, Jackie. I've just realized that as I'm doing my business plan for today, if I don't factor Gen Z in, I don't have a business for tomorrow. And I love that it wasn't a brand client saying that. I love that it was a pharma company saying that, who has, you know, a massive health remit, but also a massive by default societal remit. Do you want to future gaze for a minute? How do you see this Gen Z playing out over the next sort of 5 to 10 years, given the challenges with planet, with economy, with health issues? It's not an easy ride for this generation. They've come into an absolute mix of challenges. Do you have, from watching the millennial journey, a thought about how we might play out over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, so I think at first glance, there is, you know, there can be a case made for Gen Z to go on a similar path to millennials, given that they're also encountering economic challenges the same way that millennials have had. But I think, you know, to my point earlier, that the economic recovery has been stronger for Gen Z, and they are taking, they have no qualms about taking the upper hand in the workforce. And so because they're not afraid to go after what they want and, you know, to ask for it, I think we're going to see them making a lot of change happen or pushing for it. Again, back to my point earlier about activism, you know, Gen Z started creating their own businesses when they were teenagers. And they've also watched the millennial cohort struggle with their economic challenges. So Gen Z is very much, I don't want this to happen to me. And they're already investing earlier than millennials did. I think they are more realistic, and they are like preparing for the future earlier on. And I think we're going to see the impact of that. And I think ultimately, you know, from Gen Z that I have spoken to over the years, even though they are, you know, worried about things like climate change and their student debt, because they are so focused on change and they believe in themselves, I think they're a fairly optimistic generation. And I think that's something that is really important to keep in mind, because optimism goes a long ways in terms of motivation. So I think they're really determined to just, you know, set their own life path in general for themselves. And they're determined kind of not to be millennials 2.0.
I love that you think they're optimistic, because then change can happen and we can have hope for tomorrow. And there's 2 billion of them globally. So that's a fairly meaty amount of influence across our planet. I want to say thank you so much. It's fascinating. You've got such an amazing grasp on what's going on and tracking how this generation is showing up. That's all the time we have for today. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing everything. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.